I just love what you do for me. You're so reliable, smart, and incredibly well-connected.
Excuse me, could I pay for my meal?
Oh, of course. Just having a moment with my CommBank smart terminal. Tap away.
Feel a stronger connection. With extra connectivity, you're always payment ready. There's more to love with the CommBank smart terminal.
It is a nice terminal.
Eligibility criteria, fees and T's and C's apply.
Hey, welcome to the Medicubes podcast, where we bring you all that's good, exciting and sometimes challenging in primary healthcare.
I'm Chris Spee, joined by my good friends Kim Pointer and Rivka Hagen. Together we bring a wealth of experience and passion, as well as being in the thick of what's going on in our industry.
We used to have a laugh, debrief and chat about all the big issues and what was happening in our own professional worlds, and invite you to join us in this conversation.
So join us and our invited guests every month to bring you a lighthearted take on the latest, greatest and controversial issues, and a few pearls of wisdom along the way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this episode of Medicubes. Really, really exciting episode today, and I'm joined by two of my fabulous co-hosts, Rivka and Kim. Riv, how are you today?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing really great, and we are so thrilled that you are back on the panel after your little bit of time away. So wonderful to be back.
Oh, I miss you guys. I was listening at home, and I'm like, oh, I wish I was there. And Kim, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, Chris. I'm another year older now as of yesterday. So big birthday celebration.
Happy birthday.
Over the weekends, hiking with my girlfriends up in Bright, which was delightful. So nice to see you back, and hopefully we have a really great day today with Rob.
Yeah. So everyone, Rob, who is a colleague of mine at Cubico, is joining us for today's episode, because today's episode is all about our 2023 Cubico Touchstone Report, where we've done a big benchmarking space study across the general practice industry. First up though, let me tell you a little bit about Rob. It's introducing one of your best mates always feels a bit weird. Hey, it's Donny DeBio from you, Rob, even though I've known you for many years. So Rob is the Chief Operating Officer at Cubico. He's been with us at Cubico for 4 years, helping practices use their data to be successful. Rob has been supporting healthcare businesses actually for the last 8 years, so 4 years before Cubico as well, across lots of different software companies from HR to data. Rob has a love for all things healthcare, and I think it comes from a love of tech as well. So his love of tech and a passion of healthcare comes from also having a wife who's a registered nurse and a brother who is a local GP. So definitely in the family, isn't it, Robbo? And in his spare time, Rob tends to his veggie patch, plays Dungeons and Dragons, and makes chili jam. Hey, Robert, that's quite a thing. Do you grow the chilies for the chili jam, or are there separately exclusive activities?
I do. Well, yeah, thanks for having me, guys. So lovely. I'm happy to be along and really excited for the talk today. But I do grow the chilies. I've done like the Thai chilies, your normal red chilies you'll find. And I had a large plant that grew last year and made chili jam from that. At the moment, I've got about 7 habanero plants growing, both for chili jam, but also a friend of mine makes hot sauce. So we have like a little community of transferring over different things across.
Well, I think we've started with a fun fact, but look, we always ask our guests, Rob, what's a fun fact about you?
Last year, I did a marathon. I've always been a runner in my life, like cross country throughout uni and school and everything. But I decided to pick it up back up about 4 or 5 years ago. And trained to do a marathon. That was probably the funnest fact that comes from me besides the chili jam.
That doesn't sound like fun. It sounds like pain.
We might have to rename this the painful fact section rather than the fun fact section.
Well, they usually have a bit of a dress up section in there as well. You know, there is always a little bit of entertainment and crowd participation as well on marathons. So maybe that's what you're referring to is the fun part of it.
That's it. I was dressed up as someone who got in something way over their head and had to put themselves through 4.5 hours of grueling pain.
That sounds like a Halloween costume now. Hey, look, Rob, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We've had a lot of interest at Cubico since we produced this Touchstone data report, and we thought what a great way to get it out to people and have a good chat about it with Rivka and Kim here as well, because A, it's good to have amazing data, but B, you need to think about it and pull it apart and add some context. And data without context can sometimes be a bit dangerous as you don't think about what it means and what it stands for. So I think a great place to start is, Robbo, tell us, what was the 2023 Touchstone Report and how did it come about?
Yeah, definitely. So the 2023 Touchstone Report, as the name would suggest, is based off last year's data. We also looked at 2022 as well. Where it kind of came about is actually, you would know this, Chris, but I'm going to share it for the audience, is Cubico developed a feature called Touchstone a few years ago, where effectively one of our customers, so a practice that uses Cubico, can opt in their data to a de-identified aggregated data set. And that data set and the feature is called Touchstone. So we went about over the last couple of months talking to industry experts, just like Rivka and others, regarding kind of what trends we were seeing in the industry and, yeah, produced the 2023 Touchstone report.
Oh, fabulous. Thanks, Rob, for that bit of an overview. I love the name of Touchstone. I think it's just such a lovely, soft and nice way to describe what is in effect a benchmarking exercise. And benchmarking just sounds awful, doesn't it? It sounds harsh and rough and not very friendly at all. So yeah, good on you for giving that a funky name. Can you tell us a little bit more about what practices make up the sample and the sample size for Touchstone?
Yeah, definitely. So at the time of writing the report, so we started in February, a couple months ago, 2024, the sample was 811 practices all across Australia. So there is a common theme across all those practices. They all do use Cubico, as you'd expect, and they all use Best Practice Premier as their practice management software. When a practice opts into Touchstone, we ask a few questions regarding that practice. So what is their GP FTE? Are they a teaching practice? Do they predominantly bulk bill or mix bill? Whereabouts state they're from, PHN region, things like that. And so that sample size across the GP FTE, the dominant sample size was 5 to 9 FTE. That made up about 55% of the Touchstone data set. And about 38% of that, of the Touchstone data set, was 2 to 4 FTE, which I think is pretty representative of a general practice across Australia. 53% of the practices in the data set were teaching practices. 76% of the practices were predominantly mixed billing, which leaves 24% to being predominantly bulk billing. 31% of the practices were in Queensland. Cubico is a Queensland-born company, and 24% was in New South Wales, 22% in Victoria. So definitely more weighted across the eastern seaboard. But again, you'd probably come to expect that with the other practices coming across the other states and territories. One of the other questions we asked is in terms of their Triple M region, so modified Monash model, and 61.18% of those practices were in Triple M 1, 15.19 in Triple M 2, and then the rest across the other regions and so on. And we have an entire chapter that goes into regional and metro practices and other really interesting things. But yeah, that's kind of a synopsis of the sample of the Touchstone dataset.
And we should have said, for those who are listening, we'll drop a link to download this report into the show notes of this episode. So don't fear if it feels like there's a lot of numbers coming at you. There's a great PDF you can be able to download to have a look at it. So Robbo, we sort of know where this has come from and what data makes up the sample. Bulk billing. I know we spoke a lot about this on this podcast. Riv and Kim last year, I think we did a lot of episodes around making that transition and what it means to practices. But Rob, what has the data shown has been the main changes around the bulk billing rates in the 2023 data set?
Yeah, definitely. It was really interesting regarding the bulk billing rates. There's three main aspects when we discuss bulk billing rates in the report, and this information is peppered throughout the report. One of our first chapters is in relation to the bulk billing rates and what we saw. We did see an overall decline in the bulk billing rate. Now, when I say bulk billing rate, I'm referring to a nerdy specification here, which is the bulk billing rate as a percentage of invoices, which is just effectively our closest approximation of per consult. So you generally would have one invoice per consult. And so we're trying to say, hey, how many consults were bulk billed? So currently the bulk billing rate percentage of invoices is 65% of all invoices were bulk billed, which has gone down from 81% at the start of 2022. So a bit of a decline there. But what was more fascinating to dive into was, okay, so there's been an overall trend in the bulk billing rate as a percentage of invoices going down over the last 2 years. But what percentage of practices are bulk billing predominantly or all of their patients? So we took a measure of 80%. We looked at the data and decided that was, if a practice bulk billed more than 80% of their invoices, they were predominantly bulk billing. And we saw that change from practices that were predominantly bulk billing from 60% of all practices at the start of 2022 to 25% of practices by the end of 2023. So 25% of practices are predominantly bulk billing. And then the final one was around, we do break down by eligibility types, which is really interesting because when you're asking a survey or you're looking at other data sets, it's hard to understand when we talk about bulk billing, is it affecting concession card holders, under 16, pensioners, and so on. And so one of the other things we saw is that bulk billing rate as a percentage of invoices for concession card holders and for under 16. Although it did decrease, it didn't decrease as much as the general bulk billing rate, but about 84% of concession card holders are still bulk billed and 79% of under 16 still bulk billed across the data set.
Yeah, that's really not so surprising, I guess, for me particularly, and I can see Chris is nodding as well. We saw a lot of chatter, didn't we, about practices moving away. It was not sustainable for them to continue to be predominantly bulk billed. There was a lot of chatter about those particular other groups that you just made reference to, Rob, that are going to continue to potentially be bulk billed by a practice. But what do you think's been the largest driver in that drop of 60% of practices being predominantly bulk billed to now being below that 25%?
Yeah, definitely. Great question, Kim. I think, and I'm not going to, that's a crystal ball and this is my own ideas. This is just from talking to industry and talking to practices, this is what I see as the predominant theme. It's just been hard out there over the last few years for practices financially. So we had a 10-year Medicare rebate freeze until recently. We had rising wage costs, increase in rents, inflationary pressures on things like consumables, and the costs have gone up. And I think it hit a point in the industry where the only way to really help combat that is to move to a mixed billing model. Now, I'm not saying there's not financially sustainable bulk billing clinics out there. There are. In fact, there's probably 25% or more of them in terms of all practices. So it's just more of a practices need to continue to adapt, need to continue to be financially sustainable. And that has led to the need and the move to a mixed billing and private billing models to stay viable, because end of the day, the practice needs to stay open to service their local community.
Yeah, look, I would agree with the sentiments there, Rob. I guess an observation for me too is with regard to the response to the triple bulk billing incentive for concession patients and children under the age of 16 from November last year. And I guess for me, there was just such a big flag that the government was no longer going to continue to support higher indexation for non-concession type of patients. So it was such a clear indicator that practices needed to look after themselves in terms of non-concession patients, whereas the government is looking to support the more vulnerable populations that perhaps have that access difficulty layered on top. So for me, I think that's been a big part of this picture as well. Rob, can you tell us a little bit too about the early results on the billings per hour and the bulk billing rates since November last year?
Yeah, great point, Ruth. I'm actually going to use some words from a former guest of your podcast, Dr. Bruce Willett. He provided a quote as well in the report, and I'm going to paraphrase this part of it. And he mentioned that the triple incentive was a real needed shot in the arm for practices. And absolutely, it was useful for practices. And we saw that via the data. So to your point, to your question there, Riff, around billings per hour. So we talk about billings per hour across the report. It's for us, it's because the data that the report is looking at, billings is obviously a big part of that. We're not looking specifically at costs. Billings per hour is what we're trying to gauge practice financial sustainability is, and I believe it's a great measure for that. So we actually saw a 10% increase in November 2023, which was the largest increase for any month over the last 2 years that we saw in a single month. That's pretty impressive. And it has been steadily going up over the last 2 years as well. For the bulk billing rates, I mentioned before how some of the main points we're looking at are concession card holders and under 16. And absolutely, we saw a 4% increase in the rate of bulk billing for concession card holders, and about a 5% increase for concession card holders, and about 3.4% increase for under 16s across as well. So yeah, I think the 2-point riff around that the government wasn't looking to, trying to boost necessarily universal bulk billing rate. They were looking to target specific cohorts of patients. I'm not trying to assume that I know anything that the government is necessarily planning, but for also say, hey, they're trying to also financially support practices, then absolutely, I think it's been useful for that. It's been a good measure in billings per hour gone up, and bulk billing rate for those patient cohorts has gone up. And that's probably benefited practices, probably benefited access to healthcare for those patients as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to sum it up with those two key numbers moving there, the impact of the triple incentive there. So I guess, Rob, for practices, though, that have made that leap to be mixed and private billing, I know we had a really good chat in the webinar we did last week, Riv, about the need to be across what your fees are. that fees shouldn't be set and forget. I know that Coles changes the price of everything all the time. And in general practice, we need to be more aware of what we're charging to make sure it is supporting a sustainable business. But what are average fees doing, Robbo? So if I was, you know, a general practice out there trying to work out what are people charging for a standard consult, so maybe based on a 23, what have we seen happen there? And what is that average fee in a mixed or private billing practice?
Yeah, great question, Chris. I think that's what is also, if I was to look at the report and say, hey, whereabouts in this report is pretty actionable and useful insights for my day-to-day running of a practice, the private fees chapter, and which talks about average fees and private fees, can be really useful for that, to your exact point, Chris. So we're looking at two things here. We're looking at the average fee. Whenever I mention average fee, it's inclusive of the bulk billing, the $41.40 for a 23, for instance. So a 23, the average fee is about $60, a 36, about $100, and a 44, about $137, which has gone up. Each of them have gone up between $10 and $20 over the last 2 years. Probably isn't too surprising. That's probably driven predominantly by that moving to a more practice and moving to a mixed billing model. But if we're looking specifically at the item 23, what's the average private fee? So now we take out the bulk billing rates fees for the item. We're looking at an average private fee for a 23 of $81.14. So about $81 for an item 23. Now, thinking back to that sample data set, really interesting where we looked at, hey, 61% of the practices were in metro. So you might say, Rob, that means that most metro practice, probably 61% of those metro practices are making up, they're throwing out that average. But in the chapter where we looked at rural, so regional and metro practices and where there were differences and where there were similarities, one of the similarities we saw was the average private fee of a 23 was very similar. I'm talking like 10 cent difference, which is interesting. So at least I found that interesting. So I think that $81.14, I think it's pretty useful across the spectrum of Australia.
Rob, there's a few other sort of curious markers, I guess, in the Touchstone report. So the report did note that although private fees have increased, they haven't increased at the same pace of inflation. And at some stages or in some instances, it hasn't increased by the same amount as the MBS rebate amount. What do you make of that information? And what does all of that mean for practices as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think now, and I'm not a practitioner and I'm not running a practice, but I think speaking to the practices that I speak to and looking at the data as well, that I think practices are still a bit hesitant in raising their prices. And Riff, you had a really great point on the webinar we did the other week about this. So I'm not going to reiterate there, but yeah, practices, I think, still are hesitant. So you're exactly right. I'm not a Reserve Bank nerd and I don't have the up-to-date CPI figures on hand, but let's say there was a CPI of 7% last year. So inflation was at that roughly. Yeah, and the average fee went up $5 or $10. We're talking like 5% or so. It's definitely not going up in line with inflation. So there is still, if you look at purely from a pricing point of view, maybe there is more room to move. But at the same time, a lot of patients are doing it really tough out there as well. Hey, so fees haven't gone up as much as inflation. And then to your point about the MBS rebate increase, absolutely, we had a rebate increase. And what we looked at was at those months where there was a rebate increase, how much did the fees go up? And we did see some months where there was an MBS rebate increase, the fee did not go up at the same rate, meaning in that month or even maybe the month or two after, the patient was better off in a way because their rebate went up and the out-of-pocket was smaller. So I think it's great that practices are reviewing their fees, looking at data to also help with that, talking to their peers, talking in Facebook groups or whatever it might be regarding the kind of average fees and so on, because I think it's great that patients are also then showing up to pay for those fees and that they're valuing the amazing patient care and services practices are providing to them.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I think to that point too, practices would be well advised to just keep a really close eye on what's happening in and around their own area because, you know, a national data set may be a little bit skewed in terms of what's appropriate for my location, this particular location. So that's important. I think too, in terms of what you were referring to before, Rob, and the discussion that we had last week was around the recommendation for practices to just become really disciplined around their fee setting strategy, that these things are reviewed and revised probably more frequently than what they've been used to. And we spoke about a recommendation to at least look at your fees twice a year and incremented by a smaller amount, but more frequently rather than a larger amount, less frequently because it just puts in such a barrier for practices to feel comfortable to make the change. And they get all a little bit antsy about what the response might be from their patients. And so, yeah, doing small increments more frequently is the way to go, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting, isn't it? I've also heard practices talking about getting clients to privately pay for their chronic disease management. That always surprises me if we're thinking about vulnerable groups and trying to keep people preventable hospital admissions out in primary care land, and that's where the best spend is. I would love to know particularly what the Touchstone data found really around that CDM benchmarking.
Yeah, definitely. That's such an interesting point there, Kim. We didn't dive specifically into the bulk and private billing rates of particular items, so of a 721 or a 723. But yeah, definitely a good point that maybe practices absolutely are starting to privately bill there if they deem appropriate as well. To your question around chronic disease management in general, it was pretty exciting. I'm a sucker for chronic disease management. I know that sounds weird because I don't have a chronic condition or I don't know, but I just talking to practices every day, one of the things I ask them is like, oh, hey, like, do you have a CDM program? How's it going? And they always say, yeah, I do, but I want to do more. And so I think there is a really nice side of practices really trying to champion chronic disease management and general practitioners really passionate about it. So that was, I think, reflected in the data where we saw CDM as a percentage of billings. Now, when I say CDM percentage of billings, I'm talking about your 721, 723s, what percentage of services we provide as a total of services. And it went up. So it went up about over the last 2 years, the CDM percentage of billings. The average for about 2022 was 10.21%, and the average for 2023 was 10.59%, which sounds kind of like minor in a way, but think of like total billings also growing and CDM billings growing faster than that. I think that's pretty exciting. I think that, to my point about practices wanting to do more, I think it shows that practices are and GPs are really passionate about it and delivering amazing care to those patients.
Rob, rural practices was a really interesting part of the report, and I know I spent a fair bit of time reading and rereading that chapter. What were the key differences between our metro and regional practices? And I realize I should say also, what were some of the key similarities that might have surprised you from that data set there as well?
Yeah, definitely. It was an interesting chapter to write because regional practices are so diverse. Like there is a practice in Ballarat comparable to a practice in Cape York and so on. So it was interesting. It was inherently tricky, I think, from that standpoint. Now, when I say regional practice, what we're talking about in that sample is MMM3 to MMM7. So that's a regional practice. And when I'm saying metro, we're talking at MMM1 to 2. And I'm not going to go into depth, but the report does detail what those two sample sizes were made up of and so on around that. But to your question, Chris, what were some of the similarities? I mentioned earlier regarding that private fee, I found that really interesting and actually surprising. I don't know why, but I just assumed that a rural practice might bill slightly less on average for 23. And so the differences what I saw between regional and metro practices was things around like percentage of online appointments were lower in regional practices. I think that's just because their patient base probably, maybe they're booked out further in advance and they're booking continuous appointments when they're seeing that patient. Maybe it's an older demographic, maybe not. But I think there's definitely was less percentage of online appointments booked in regional practices. Then same with telehealth, there was slightly less in regional practices as well. Other differences, there were slightly, the bulk billing rate as percentage of invoices was slightly more for regional practices, which was interesting. That probably was not too surprising, but it was interesting nonetheless to see that across regional practices. When we looked at some of the other metrics around different measures within the Touchstone data set, we saw more chronic disease management and more health assessments and much more nurse-led percentage of services done in regional compared to metro practices. So more CDM, more health assessment, more nurse-led services in regional. That was not surprising, but it was interesting around that in relation to, I think that helped look at the complexity of care. And I mentioned before the diversity of practices, and I think also diversity of care and complexity of care for regional practices. I think that also shone through in that chronic disease management though as well. But that's just some of the differences. I think it's just fascinating. I think every practice is doing amazing work out there. And it was just interesting to see where there were differences, but absolutely regional practices are quite diverse and even metro practices can be quite different compared to your own metro Sydney or if you're an outer suburb in Brisbane.
Okay. Rob, can you explain a little bit more about what's happening with online appointments more broadly?
Yeah, definitely. One of the metrics we looked at for online appointments was more around percentage of their total appointments, how much of them were booked online. And for that, what we looked at specifically was how it's changed over time. Now, with that, we have seen a pretty substantial increase over the last 2 years, or more of a kind of consistent trend upwards. So in 2022, the average percentage of appointments booked online was roughly 17%. And then in 2023, we did dip in December. I think that's just because it's Christmas. I'll take the kind of the October, and that was around 26%. So that's a pretty decent increase. I think that's both with changing patient demographics, probably more, I'm assuming more adoption of online appointment systems by practices over the last 2 years. But I think it's mostly in the shifts of demographics for patients, as well as more patients probably finding themselves on the online appointment vendors apps or booking online. We've got a demographic shift where I think Gen Y now is a predominant generation across Australia. So it is just interesting to see that across the online appointments booked online. And hopefully that means more efficiencies for practices. I think they're still maintaining really amazing relationships with patients. I don't think it affects that. But yeah, hopefully it just means more efficiencies for practices and potentially different experiences for patients.
Really interesting about online appointment schedules, booking and making it really convenient. But I'm really curious to know about what's happening in the clinic while people are waiting for their appointment. Like, what's going on with wait times?
Yeah, definitely. Great question, Kim. So one of the particular measures that we report on is in relation to the average wait time. So that's patients sitting in that seat in the waiting room, and how long do they have to wait before they see the doctor over their scheduled appointment time. So effectively, how late are we running? With that, we've actually seen it be pretty constant. Like, it hasn't gone up over the last 2 years, which I think is really nice and refreshing. I think practices are, as always, working incredibly hard, GPs working incredibly hard, as we all know, to see patients. And the fact that it's stayed consistent as demand, we know that demand for general practitioner services have gone up over the last 2 years. So it's just interesting seeing that as well. So the average diary wait time is still around that 10-minute mark. And that was what it was at the start of 2022. And that's what it is at the end of 2023. Now, there is a slight difference between bulk billing and mixed billing practices. A mixed billing practice, the average wait time is around 9 minutes. And the average wait time for a bulk billing practice is about 11 minutes. So there's a slight difference there. But the average, yeah, definitely that 10-minute diary wait time.
That's amazing. I'm going to dump my GP practice in and say I've never waited 10 minutes at my practice. So I don't know what's happening with the data there. Hey, Rob, we're coming to the end of this week's episode. Thanks so much for sharing with us all those really interesting insights and giving them some color and some details and some understanding. You've been talking to a lot of practices over the last 2 weeks. What are you hearing as the takeaways from the report? What's the main actions? What would you suggest practices jump into the report and have a look at and then go away and look at in their practice?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I want to reiterate Riff's point at the start around, if we stripped everything down, we're looking at benchmarking. And that sounds like a difficult word to have difficult conversations. And that's not the intent of this report. And that's why I think it was someone quite creative at Cubico called it Touchstone. But it is around something. had to plug that in there. But Touchstone and the report is really to help practices see where they're succeeding and where they can improve. But read through the report, recommend it, look back, compare some of the numbers to what you're seeing in your practice, take into account the things like sample size, like regional and metro practices, try to compare apples to apples where you can, and then absolutely see where you're succeeding. If your billings per hour is $450 per hour average, because you have some great GPs doing amazing services at the practice, use that in a conversation when you're recruiting your next GP. Hey, the average billings per hour at our practice is $450 because we have amazing docs, we have awesome nurses that support them, and we have a really great administration team in terms of reception, helping fill diaries. The average in Australia was around $380. Cool, you're going to bill slightly more than the average. That's where we're succeeding. That's how I can use some of these numbers in things like recruitment and retention. Where we're looking to improve, we are looking at averages. So again, I want to compare that bit to around apples to apples, but where can we improve? Again, take into account, what is the average private fee and what are you charging? But of course, making sure you take into account your patients in your demographic area and your suburb or your city, because that's going to be very different to maybe the national average. You can have a look at things like percentage of online bookings. If you don't have an online appointment system, cool. If I know that roughly maybe 1 in 3 of my appointments are going to be booked online, if I had an online appointment system, how can that help our practice? Chronic disease management, we've seen that go up over the last 2 years. Have you noticed that trend in your practice? Is your chronic disease management nurse now busier now than they were 2 years ago? How is that affecting your practice? Or is it not going up in your practice? What can we do and how can we implement other strategies to continue to provide amazing chronic disease management in our practice? So I think there's lots of different information in there. It's a long report. I would know, just like Chris reread it over many times as we were publishing it. So did I. I will say I'm guilty for some of the chapters, but in writing it, there's a lot there. I think have a good read through the contents, figure out what chapters are going to be relevant to you, read through them. If you don't understand some of the nuanced data terms, have a look at the methodology, help understand how then that's relevant to your practice. And yeah, try to take something actionable away for it. Our intent with the report was to support general practices. So if you feel like if you're getting some awesome wins at it, email us info@cubico.com.au or reach out. We'd love to hear about how you may have found it useful or not. We're going to do another one next year. So, and the years after as well. And we're going to stay true to just trying to support general practice with the report.
That's awesome. Thanks a lot, Rob. Kim, final thoughts?
My final thoughts is use your data, make wise decisions, and always constantly be looking to see where you can improve.
And Riv, what about you?
Yeah, look, I would absolutely echo those simple sentiments that data is data and it's useless unless you actually do something with that. I particularly loved the idea of using these kinds of reports as marketing tools to showcase what you are doing particularly well within your practice and looking to use that to especially attract and retain your clinical workforce staff. I think that's a really important area. But, you know, not to get too scared by perhaps some of the challenging findings that practices might find when they compare themselves to others, and really look for the opportunities in that and make steps to improve and shift the dial from where you're at now to getting to the next step. That's the key thing for me.
And I think my final tip would be, remember, a lot of these improvements, a lot of looking at this data can be a wonderful quality improvement activity for your practice. So we know we're going to do our quality improvement activities. How can we pick some key points of data? And maybe it gives us a good guide about in our practice where a quality improvement activity might be most useful. And then make sure you document it and use it for that quality improvement registered there as well. So you get double bang for your buck for this one. Rob, thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast today. I really appreciated you being the data nerd on this one and saving me having to be too data nerdy on it. And we look forward to having you on the podcast again with the 2024 report next year.
Definitely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Medicubes podcast. Make sure you subscribe via your favourite podcast listening app so you don't miss an episode. Medicubes is brought to you by Cubico, MediCoach and Medical Business Services with technical support from the awesome crew at Talking Health Tech. This podcast presents information of a general nature and we recommend that you obtain professional advice for your individual circumstances always. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions and suggestions for future topics on the show. Make sure you visit us via the Medicubes website, which you can access via the show notes of this episode. Also, if you're enjoying the show, write us a nice review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and share it with someone who might get some value from it so we can continue to share these important messages with more people. Speak to you next time.